very much. Well, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here in such a splendid environment from the human point of view, from the scientific point of view, and also from the architectural point of view. And so I want to thank Carol, who supported the invitation, and also the perimeter for inviting me. So as a next talk for us, I'm going to talk about the relations between quantum dynamical semigroups and entanglement. All of you know what entanglement is. Perhaps not all of you know what quantum dynamical semigroups are. Essentially, quantum dynamical semigroups are the way people invented to describe the motion of quantum systems in an environment, not when they are embedded into some kind of heat bath or generic environment, and these systems are quantum systems are really interacting with the environment. And I would like to illustrate some relations between the techniques that one has dealing with semigroups and the possibility of detecting entanglement, and especially bound entanglement. I will try to give a brief resume of all these notions. So I start rather pedantically and pedagogically. Well, I'm going to consider two systems, A and B. Let's say of the same dimensionality, finite dimensionality, and I will be using density matrices, because density matrices are the generic description of states of systems embedded into within reservoir, heat baths, or generic environment. So this is just an example of two pure states of A and B, and the tensor product of these two pure states, those two matrices 4x4, are well-known separable states, of course, the simplest that one can imagine.
And Fabio, there's a hockey stick you can use to play hockey or to show something.
This
one.
Okay. So separable states are all those that you can construct by mixing as complex linear combinations tensor products of density matrices for A and B. Entangled states are those which cannot be written in that way. These ones are exhibiting classical correlations, which are somehow contained in the weights of the decomposition here, and instead entangled states show non-classical correlations. Well, the easiest example one of the most interesting is the maximally symmetric state in dimension 2. Here you have the product states. The interference theorems are those which make this projector onto psi 2 plus an entangled state, different from a separable one like written there. Okay. Now, here comes a bit of wishful thinking or philosophical thinking. The aim of this transparency is to give an idea of the change undergone by the notion of entanglement in the course of the years. I mean, we start from Einstein to Boltzmann-Rosen, and then we go to Schrödinger, Bellman. These statements somehow reflect a kind of epistemological attitude towards entanglement, in the sense that those people who were considering the problem were considering it as a kind of challenge, an interpretational challenge inherent in quantum mechanics. But here you see a change of attitude, a change of perspective. Maybe entanglement can start to be perceived as something that can be used. And in this talk, I would rather point not to the use of endowment, rather to the fact that, as the Radetzky family pointed out, that endowment, implies or motivates the application of positive maths in physics. I hope to be able to convey the message to you or clarify what they meant. So, entanglement as a physical resource, then, that is the change of attitude. As a physical resource, everybody knows, quantum teleportation, quantum superdense coding, just to quote some of the possible application, quantum cryptography and quantum computation by measurement-based quantum computers. Well, so there are a few things to be remembered. Namely, that first entanglement has to be detected, so one has to be sure whether a bipartite state is entangled or not. Second, entanglement is degraded by noise. The maximum entangled state I showed before is very easily turned into a mixed state, which is less entangled by embedding the two qubits within an environment, within a heat bath, or within a reservoir. And third, that makes when the maximum entangled state is the maximal content, entanglement content is degraded, one would like to be able to perform protocols, distillation protocols, to extract from the mixed state, which has less entanglement, maximum entangled states. But first of all, one has to recognize whether a bipartite state is entangled or not. And here, as it is written there, the entanglement is detectable by positive maths. So what are positive maths? Well, it's sort of well known and easy to understand. But the only thing is to distinguish positive observables, which are emission matrices with positive spectrum, from positive maths, which are those maps which keep the positivity of a positive operator. These are the positive maps. So one shouldn't be confused by the definition. Positive observables means emission matrices with positive eigenvalues. And positive maps, those linear maps on matrices, which preserve the positivity of matrices, that is, as it is written here. Now, take the transposition. The transposition doesn't alter the spectrum, so a positive matrix, when transposed, remains a positive matrix. Now, the famous partial transposition, which can be understood as the lifting of the transposition from acting on MD to acting on MD tensor at heat, but acting only on one factor. Now, if you take a separable state, then acting, this is the identity, which means doing nothing on the first factor. You act with a transposition only on the second. This is a positive matrix. A density matrix is a positive matrix. The transposition preserves positivity. The other is not touched at all. And so, on separable state, the lifted transposition, the partial transposition, acts perfectly well as a positive linear map. But surprise, it is non-positive on entangled state. If you do the same action, if you perform the same action on the maximally entangled state, P2, which had two ones here, you see the two ones moving from the rightmost corner and the leftmost corner into the center. And of course, this is not anymore a positive matrix, just because this central matrix here has negative eigenvalues. So the partial transposition, the lifted transposition, is not a positive matrix. And so on. Well, easy. Density matrices are the basis for the statistical interpretation of quantum mechanics. Spectralizing a density matrix, you get the eigenprojectors and the eigenvectors. But the eigenvalues of density matrices are probabilities. And so they must be positive. So physical transformations must make states into states. And so they have the physical transformation must be described by linear, okay, that's to linear quantum mechanics, by linear transformations, preserving the positivity of density matrices. Otherwise, the eigenvalues wouldn't be interpretable as probabilities. So the physical transformations must act positively in order to preserve the statistical interpretation of quantum mechanics. So you would say, okay, the transposition is a positive map, therefore we are perfectly okay with the transposition. The point is that if you have A and B, two systems, and you act with the transposition only on B, then the action, you can consider the two systems to get together, and the action, the local action of D only on B is represented by the tensor product with the identity. And so you want to be sure not only that D is positive on B, but also that the lift, the partial transposition, so when you act on both systems, the action, also this action must preserve the positivity of the eigenvalues of all states over A plus B. But we have just seen in the previous transparency an example which contradicts this. Namely, this is a state, the projection over a maximum Lyapunov state of two qubits, but the lift transposition doesn't keep the positivity of the eigenvalues, and so this means that the partial transposition is not a physical map, physically inconsistent. Just because, why it is physically inconsistent? Just because given T we can consider this, but not only. It is physically inconsistent because here, among the states of A plus B, there are, fortunately for the richness of quantum mechanics, entangled states. The entangled states force, the presence of entangled states forces us to consider not only the positivity of single maps and single systems, but also the positivity of the lifted maps. Okay? And this is what is written here. This is not just mathematics, this is physics. And it is the physically necessary constraint, the fact that also these objects must be linear maps, must be positive linear maps. It is a physically constraint due to the presence of entanglement. Now you would ask then, okay, the transposition is not consistent with such a request, with such a constraint. So what are the maps which are consistent with such a request? And these maps are called completely positive. So in few words, what is written here is that physically consistent transformations must be described by completely positive maps. Not only about positive maps. So positivity is not enough. Complete positivity is necessary. Okay, want to have some examples of completely positive maps. Fortunately, completely positive maps are not only physically necessary, but are mathematically quite under control, completely under control. Because all of them, so if you ask yourself, okay, what are completely positive maps? Are all those maps from MD into MD, which are positive, but not only, also the lifted action is positive. Good, this is the definition. Completely positive maps are this one, CP. But how can I recognize a CP map? Well, you just look whether they have this form, which is the Stein-Sprink, Krauss-Stein-Sprink representation of completely positive. So, for instance, the usual projection postulate is such a completely positive map. This is another, this is the polarizing channel, another completely positive map. But look, about the consistency, no? The physical consistency of transformation of states. The usual Schrödinger evolution is a completely positive map by its very definition, because it is ut rho ut dagger, which is exactly the simplest form that one can have here. So the usual time evolution, which is the unitary transformation of state, is by its very form completely positive. So interestingly enough, if one restricts to a unitary evolution, there are no problems with coupling B with an ancilla, A with another system, and looking at the number states, and lifting the unitary transformation. Since it is completely positive, no problems can arise. So these unitary evolutions are perfectly physically consistent. I'm stressing this because the situation completely changes when one considers not the evolution of closed quantum systems, but the evolution of open quantum systems. Then the description is not in terms of commutators, not in terms of unitary evolution, in terms of more general linear groups. Now, so I said that positive maps are not physically consistent as operations performed on quantum states because of entanglement and because of the possibility of joining together two systems. Now, what is then their role in physics? Well, it is this, the answer to this question is they operate as entanglement detectors. Why? Because you remember the transposition. The transposition alone on one system is good, but when you lift it, and you make the partial transposition act on entangled states, then these entangled states become non-positive. Okay? So it is exactly the entangled states which are somehow spoiled by positive transformation when they are lifted. And this is why they operate as entanglement detectors, and this is why the Orlovsky family pointed to the fact that entanglement somehow, in their view, from their perspective, is very important among the other things, because it implies, or it in entanglement purports the use of positive maps in physics. And in fact, the famous theorem is that if you want to recognize whether a state of rho A plus B is entangled or not, what you do? You take a positive, not completely positive, only positive map. Well, you check, okay, in a sense, a state is entangled if and only if there is a positive but not completely positive map satisfying such a relation here in that inequality. Well, this is the maximally entangled state in the dimension. This is the state whose entanglement we want to detect, we want to recognize, and this is the lifting of the positive. So I write this here. Okay, we have this DBST dimension, and then we have lambda, and then we have the maximally symmetric state in D dimension, and then here we have the state we want to discuss. If we discover that this trace is negative, then immediately we know that rho A plus B is entangled. What's the problem? Well, the problem is that finding, well, yes, please.
Well, I was just wondering if this result that you're quoting, if you happen to know whether it actually gives a construction in the case of an entangled state, it actually constructively determines the positive map that witnesses the fact that it's entangled.
Well, the hard task is exactly finding the lambda. Huh? So there's a huge phenomenology of witnesses of positive maps, but there is no general result that if I have given a state, I know which positive map. Suppose you have a state, you know that it is entangled, you give it to me, and you ask me, okay, find the lambda or the weakness. In general, I don't know. I mean, there are no general theorems on that. There's a huge phenomenology of possible weaknesses or possible maps. Apart in a case which I'm going to show now, which is the easiest. Unfortunately, general answers are not available so far.
Even though we know that such a map exists.
We know that such a map exists. The problem is the theorem of Borodetsky, the theorem is not constructive. It says that a state is entangled if and only if such positive map doing that job exists. But in order to construct it, that's another map.
So the two notions are not constructed. One is that it's not computable, and another is that it's not efficiently computable. And you mean it's not computable at all?
No, some of it showed that the problem is empty. It's an empty problem. So recognizing whether a state ROI plus B is entangled is an empty problem. So this would mean that it's solvable, but people in exponential time.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily should try to solve it in that way.
But if you could find that thing efficiently, then we'd have to be right.
But this other result that you're quoting, it will determine whether the state is entangled or not, but it might not.
Might
actually
give you
a
yeah.
But isn't the problem? Are you trying to solve the problem to find out when a state is entangled or not, or are you trying to quantify how much?
I just try to see whether a state is entangled or not.
But isn't that kind of simple? Wouldn't it be more interesting to actually quantify how much entangled?
Of course, yes, but I'm afraid problems are already at the level of recognizing whether a state is entangled or not. Then another problem is to quantify. If you discover that it is entangled, then the next point is how much.
I mean, concretely, if you can show that you can make it negative,
yes.
Can you make it arbitrarily negative, or can you give a lower bound to find the measure?
No, it depends on the state, I do not even know it is because of my ignorance. I do not even know that whether there are correspondence. Suppose that you have some degree of negativity. I do not even know whether this degree of negativity is related to the entanglement of formation, for instance. So the more negative, the higher is the entanglement of formation. I do not even know whether there are correspondences between the two.
So do not. I mean, in a sense, there are processes. If you take this transpose operation we were talking about, so then it's exactly it's called negativity. The less the trace is, the more the state is entangled. In the sense of such a measure which fulfills all criteria, but there are many different measures of entanglement. So it's also not a final solution to the problem.
So you're saying that for those states which are detected by partial transposition, yes. For them. The more negative they are, the more the higher the entanglement of formation.
No. The higher the negativity. So
the
this quantity here, if you call it lambda or I know S, has a flavor of a kind of measure of entanglement. And it could be useful, but it's not necessarily equal or proportional to other measures other than we are working with. Yes?
Well. Thank you. Completely positive maps, which have the time frame. So the CP lambda is of the form science but the graph transform form. Differently, unlike CP maps, positive maps have no general characterization. So there are no theorems which ensure that given a map, a linear map, whether it is positive or not. But at least a partial subset of positive maps can be characterized by the notion of decomposability. So positive maps are decomposable, even by definition, even only if they can be written in this way, where these two here are completely positive maps, so all this Krauss times field form, and T is the transposition. So this is a definition. Then there is an important theorem by Horonovich that states that when, in the easiest case, when you consider positive maps from N2 into N2, so from qubits into qubits, so linear positive transformation of qubits, all these are, and also qubits, okay, but let us stick to Q2, to transformation of qubits, then all positive transformation of qubits are decomposable. So they have this form. But this is not true anymore in higher dimension. Well, what are the consequences of such a theorem of Horonovich? Two, that together with the theorem of Bjorodetsky, an important corollary, if we have a state of two qubits, this state is entangled if and only if, or here it is written, this state is separable if and only if it remains positive under partial transposition. This is an important consequence. So, entangled state of qubits are detected, recognized as entangled by the partial transposition. In which sense? In the sense that if you act with this here on an entangled state of two qubits, these entangled states are not do not remain positive under that action. Okay? But this is the first consequence. That partial transposition is a universal detector, entanglement detector for states of two qubits. But it is not anymore. That's the other consequence, not of this theorem, but of the fact that this theorem holds only in these cases. And the other consequence is that in other dimension, there are states entangled which remain positive under partial transposition. So, in spite of the fact that if you act on them with this lifted operation, they remain positive, they are nevertheless entangled. Okay? This was a discovery of Pavel, I think, or the consequence, I mean, it's not only mathematical nicety, but the point is that, remember, I just mentioned that when you have a maximally entangled state which is degraded by some thermal effect or whatever, then there's the hope to distill out of this mixed state, which is not maximally entangled, a certain, out of many copies of that non-maximally entangled state, a set of maximally entangled states. Now, it turns out that if you have an entangled state which is PPT, so which remains positive under partial transposition, then you cannot distill maximum entanglement out of that. So it is not only important to detect entanglement, but it is also important to recognize which kind of entanglement. Okay, to quantify it, yes, but before, the first thing is detect whether a state is entangled or not, but then also whether it is bound entangled. Pavel Horodetsky calls it bound entangled because it is somehow locked there and cannot be amplified. So it is also important to see whether this entanglement which one has is bound or not. And here, just a few lines. I hope you can not be disturbed too much by this, by my words in these lines here. But so, which is the relation of how to detect bound entangled state? The answer is not with by means of decomposable state. Why? Because, look, suppose that rho is a state which remains positive under partial transposition. Okay? Positive under partial transposition. And you have that it is entangled. Okay, so you act with the lifting, you lift this, and you act, well, the lifting is linear, so you act with the lifted lambda 1, but lambda 1 is completely positive by definition of the composability. So acting on the state, you get a positive outcome. You act with the partial transposition, but this is assumed to be PPT, so it remains positive under partial transposition. Then you act with the lifted lambda 2, which is completely positive, on the partially transposed row, and again you get a positive outcome. So there is no hope to make negative this stuff here if row AD is PPT and entangled and lambda is decomposable. Now you look a bit puzzled by this, but what I mean is that given this action here, you can transform by duality, you can translate it, shift it on row AD, A plus B. So in the end you have a formula of this sort. Identity D tensor, the dual, let me denote the dual of lambda by lambda star, acting now on rho A plus B. Now it's easy to see that if lambda is decomposable, also the dual is decomposable. So if the state is PPT, there is no hope. So this, if the state is PPT and lambda star is decomposable, there is no hope to get negative eigenvalues out of here, in spite of the fact that this is entangled. So no hope of negative eigenvalues, so no hope to get this expectation negative. This expectation is always positive if lambda is decomposable and if rho AD is PTES. So in spite of yes, it's entangled. In spite of entanglement, if this entanglement is bound, decomposable maps cannot be detected. Okay? So in order to detect bound entangled states, one needs non-decomposable states, which is not an easy matter to construct. This construction of decomposable, non-decomposable maps, positive maps, is part of the phenomenology of positivity, and let me call it phenomenology. By this I mean that there is no comprehensive framework where all these things can be put together in a consistent way. There are scattered, many scattered results. Okay, and now. Now, what are quantum dynamical semigroups? I hope to make you understand why they can be useful. So, quantum dynamical semigroups are the description of the motion of quantum system embedded in environments. So, the system plus the environment is a closed system. It evolves unitarily as a closed system. One is not interested in the environment, is interested in S in the subsystem. So the usual trick is get rid of the degrees of freedom of the environment by tracing them out. Now, if the initial state of system plus environment is factorized, in this case, one gets a consistent evolution on the states of the subsystem. But what one likes to have in physics is a semigroup composition also. What do you expect? What do you expect? You expect an irreversible evolution, right? Because you are here, because you are tracing the way something, so you are losing knowledge, and so you expect irreversibility, which is the kind of thing that is very likely when you have a dissipative environment and something which moves it. Huh? Good, very good, okay. But then, at least you aim at having a composition, a semi-group composition law of this sort, that if you put together two positive times, if you move from zero to S, and then you have another movement in time by T seconds, let's say you get exactly what you have if you move by T plus S from 0. This is the semigroup composition law. What turns out is that when you trace away, even with this condition, when you trace away the degrees of freedom of the environment, then you never, unless you are in very trivial cases, then you never get a composition law. In order to get a semigroup composition law, you need a Markovian approximation. So you need a kind of technique which allows you to go from curly GT to gamma T. But this is something which is rather confusing. The literature is huge. The first attempts are of the 50s. Bloch, Rettig, NMR. Well, but if you go into the details of those constructions, the maps they get are not even positive. So I told you that positivity is not sufficient for physical consistency. Complete positivity is necessary because of entanglement. And then in the literature you find description of dissipative quantum systems which are not even positive. Well, this is just a side remark. So, this is a repetition of what I said. One would like to have guaranteed the semigroup which maps states into states. Forget the lifting. So now I am in this situation here. I'm considering B, and B is within an environment, and it moves according to a semigroup gamma T. So keep it alone. At least gamma T should be positive in order to preserve the probability positivity of the eigenvalues of the density matrices of B, and so the interpretation as probabilities. Okay? But in the literature, you find things which behave rather weirdly with respect to this fact. Okay, this is just a word. But suppose that you couple B with A, and so you would have, in order to have a physically consistent dissipative description, you want to have not only that this is positive, but also that this B positive. And from what I told you, positivity of this implies complete positivity of gamma T. Okay? So, ultimately, the physical consistency of a dissipative quantum evolution relies on the quantum evolution to be a completely positive method. Okay. Now, there's a general theory of open quantum system dynamics, and the general theory on finite dimension. And it's a general result that the generator, these are semigroups, so they can be exponential generators. The generators have this form, where these Fs are the basis of matrices, an orthogonal basis of matrices in MD. Now, whether the gamma T is completely positive or not, depends essentially on these coefficients. These coefficients form what is known as a Kosakowski matrix. Now, there is a general theorem which says that gamma T, the dissipative evolution, is completely positive, so it is physically consistent if and only if this matrix is positive.
For any basis, because F can be taken in different basis.
Yes. But changing basis is a unitary rotation of the Kosakowski matrix, so its positivity is not spoiled. It's interesting. You have a very straight answer. You want complete positivity of the semigroup, then take a generator with a positive Kosakowski matrix. This fact, which is a complete characterization of the generator, is very much related to the fact that the structure of completely positive maps is determined by the cross fields, the Krauss-Stein-Spring theorem. That's the relation. One is able to completely characterize completely positive centers. This is not true anymore. If Cij is not a positive matrix, suppose it is not positive, so then you ask, okay, gamma t is not completely positive. Is at least positive, no general answer. No general answer. Okay? So, just to give you a...
How is the Kostkowski matrix related to the Choi matrix? So there's this theorem of Choi and it looks just like a particular matrix.
The relation is, I think, rather involved in, it is not directly, you can find the relation, but it is different because the Choi matrix is what you get from, let us say, gamma t. So you take gamma t, you act with the lifted gamma t on p d plus, and this you call Choi matrix. So let me denote it by d t. Now, I don't see any direct relation between this d t and the Kostakowski matrix. Not direct. There are relations, of course, because this here is e to the t l, and l contains the Kostakowski matrix. But the if you thought of a quite straight relation between the two, I don't think there is. Of course, there is a dependence because this Choi matrix contains the parameters of the Kostakowski matrix, but not in a straightforward way. So in the another interesting point in this field of quantum open quantum dynamics is that there are two communities. One is the quantum information theorists who take complete positivity as a must from the very beginning. But there is a huge community, essentially physical chemists, who do not want to hear a complete positivity. They simply argue as follows. Well, why should one impose complete positivity? Because B, which is moving here in my lab, may be entangled with some ancilla A somewhere. But this ancilla is totally out of control, experimentally. The relation between A and B can be supported, but cannot be controlled. Okay, and then the observation, there is a second observation, is that the form of the generators of completely positive semigroups, which is a result of this structure, which is rather constrained, has a physical bearing on the decay times, experimentally measured. So the decay times of the diagonal and off-diagonal elements of, for instance, qubit matrices, are not free. They must stay in a hierarchy relation. So the physical chemist argument is as follows. Now, you are imposing a hierarchy between the decay times only because you are supposing that your system, my system in my lab here, may be entangled with something else in the universe which is completely out of control. I cannot buy this. I don't want to hear of that. And in fact, many of them struggle to find that complete positivity is only a mathematical nicety which makes things a little bit easier from the computational point of view and so on. So the question is, can one do with positivity only? Well, these guys say yes. There is no reason why one should impose complete positivity. My answer is, well, look, you are just considering single systems in a bar, just B. The point is that you have to couple this system with some different systems, some other with an ancilla. Of course, you are right when you think of an ancilla somewhere else in the universe, wherever, out of control. But what happens if A is not taken beyond Saturn or Jupiter, but A, the other system, the ancilla, is in the same environment, so that it evolves according to the same dissipative dynamics, and, well, in some rough zero-order approximation, the evolution of the two is gamma t tensor gamma t. So you see the difference here? There is no more the identity tensor gamma t. The identity means that A is out of control, somewhere, some inert, and not completely out of control. Here we are in an experimentally feasible situation where two systems are in the same environment, and they behave and they move dissipatively. And so, if you can imagine that problems arise here because of the possibility of entanglement between A and B, as in the case where you have the identity tensor.
Well, I mean, that's clearly not true for arbitrary positive maps, right? So if you take a transpose, apply a transpose to both halves, that's still positive.
So the transpose cannot be made part of a symmetry. It is not connected to the identity. So at t equals 0, you have the identity.
Okay.
Yes. in fact, so there's a bit of a result here. Suppose that you are in such a situation, where you have A and B within the same environment, and the evolution of the two is gamma t tensor gamma t. And you just ask for the positivity of this tensor product. Well, remarkably, it turns out that if you want the positivity of gamma t tensor gamma t, so the fact that this can be at least considering just this system as a nice, consistent physical map, then positivity of gamma t tensor gamma t implies, and this implies by gamma t being completely positive. So if you ask positivity of this, you need complete positivity of this. The result extends to the fact that if you substitute the identity with another gamma t, the positivity of gamma t tensor gamma t implies, it is implied by the complete positivity of the single gamma.
But they have the same gamma.
But the same gamma. In fact, another thing is that, a second result is that, if you allow the two systems, A and B, to be in two different environments, so that, so you can consider them entangled, but they suffer from different dissipations, and then you have gamma 1 and gamma 2, then the result is not true anymore. So one may have a positive tensor product without having gamma 1t and gamma 2t completely positive. Okay? So this is the physics. The physical picture is, suppose you have two qubits, and you put them in an environment, in a heat bath, which is not thermally stable. For instance, one qubit is here and it feels a certain temperature. Locally is in equilibrium, but not overall. And where the qubit stays, there is some temperature, T1. The other one is over there, and around it also there's a thermal equilibrium, but at a different temperature. So this is the kind of physical picture. Two different dissipative motions. And now you ask, you take the tensor product, and you ask, okay, is this, when this tensor product is a positive map, when is it acceptable, at least locally, as a physical transformation? The answer is, you can accept it, you do not have to impose that both are completely positive. One has to be completely positive, the other one can be just positive. And here, you have, this is the physics. And from the physics, you go to a kind of phenomenon, well, a way to construct positive but not completely positive maps. Remember, there is a difficulty in constructing positive maps. There is no difficulty at all for completely positive maps. They are fixed, they have this form. So the only freedom is choosing the GIs. But for positive maps, there are no general rules. Huh? So the more one, the more ideas one has, the better. Huh? And this is one idea, because of that result. So take gamma 1 and gamma 2, two semigroups. One of them completely positive. You see, this is the Kosakowski matrix. Very simple. 1, 1, 1, 1 is positive. Diagonal and positive. Take another Kosakowski matrix, 1, minus 1, 1. This is not positive, so you are sure that the semigroup connected to this C2 is not completely positive. But putting them together, you have, you can construct a semigroup gamma t because of the theorem quoted here. You are sure in this case that gamma 2 is at least positive. So this is completely positive, this is positive. You put them together and you find a nice, easily and nice, because it can be easily handled, semigroup. I make you notice that this is possible because one governs the generators. So the trick, why should one look at semigroups? Because one can look at the generators. And so the two semigroups can be explicitly computed. These are the expressions, okay, they are not particularly illuminating. How much time do I have? 5 minutes? Oh,
oh. Yeah, ten.
10 minutes, great. and then, okay, what is gamma t? Gamma t can be worked out explicitly, and this part here, if you look at it, you have the identity, you have the trace, which is the depolarizing channel, another identity, so this piece here is completely positive. Then there is a second piece, okay, this huge, well, this expression, and the transposition on M4. So, remember the definition of decomposable maps, lambda 1 plus lambda 2, composed to the transposition. Now you see something of that sort, completely positive transposition. You, in order to see whether this here is decomposable, you have to ensure that this stuff is a completely positive. So the question is gamma t decomposable? And if not, may I use gamma t to detect bound entanglement? Remember, in order to detect bound entangled states, I need non-decomposable maps. So maps not of this sort. So if I am sure that this is not completely positive, then okay, it's an indication that I could use gamma t to detect bound entangled states. Which bound entangled states? And this kind of, now I come to the last part of the talk, which introduces the notion of, well, square lattice states. Now, I think there is much more than I behind these, much more than I'm going to tell you. They are very much more structured. They are very simply constructed. So you think the maximal symmetric state in this here is in M4. N4, tensor N4. So 16, these are 16 times 16 matrices. These are sigma, alpha, and beta are products of Pauli matrices. But you see that they act only on the second factor. So they are very simple. On the first factor, you have just the identity action. Now you construct these are the normalized states. The projections are orthogonal projections. And so you can put together, you see that they are white lattice because you have two indices, alpha and beta, going from 0 to 3. Sigma 0 is the identity of the Pauli matrix, 1, 0, 0, 1. The other Pauli matrices. And so you can construct a lot of very simple states just by picking from the lattice square lattice 0, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. You just pick some intersections, for instance, these ones, and you construct, and you have many possibilities of constructing such states, which I call lattice states. And the question is whether they are in bounded, whether they are bounded. This is the question I want to answer. Depending on the choice, this I is a subset of the possible sites, for instance, this one, this is I. Depending on the choice of I would like to answer two questions. First, is rho I entangled? Second, is rho I bounded? And now, there are two results. The first one is that the problem whether these states are VPT. Remember, bound entangled states are entangled states which remain positive under partial transposition. Fortunately, the structure of such arena of lattice states is so that VPTness, positivity under partial transposition, is completely controlled. Just to give you an example, what you have to do is to take a row and a column and count how many crosses there are in the row and the column, excluding the intersection. If that number is smaller than the number of crosses divided by 2, then you have a PTT state. For instance, these are PTT states, this is not. Why? You take this row and this column, and in this row and column you have 1, 2, 3 crosses, which is larger than Ni 4 divided by 2, which is 2. Okay, and then you construct all length, and so PP, whether they are PTT or not, is governed by that theory. Okay? Now, if you are given a PPT, then you want to know whether it is entangled. If you have a non-NPT, so non-positive under partial transposition, you are sure that the state is entangled. But if you have a PPT state, then you have still to investigate whether there is entanglement or not. And it turns out, where is it? Yeah, there's another. Now, the theorem of above was giving a necessary sufficient. Oops. A necessary and sufficient condition for being PPT. Here, the theorem is just a sufficient condition for being PPT and also entangled. And that's the theorem, the sufficient condition. It is best understandable, at least roughly understandable, by these two examples. So the theorem says that if you find in your arrangement, in your choice, a row and a column such that they contain just one cross, which is not coinciding with the intersection, like this one, you see? This row and this column has only one cross, which is not coinciding with the intersection. Then you are sure that this state here, which is PPT by the rule of before, is also entangled. And this is another example. Here you see, that this column and this row contains just one cross, which is not in their intersection. Again, the theorem states that this set is, well, the theorem before, necessary and sufficient condition, ensures you that this is PPT. And the other theorem, the sufficient condition, tells you that it is entangled. And how can one show that? Well, sorry for just, it is related to where is it? To thesis. So instead of a generic lambda, now I put gamma t, the semigroup which I constructed before, capital gamma t, which was capital gamma t, which was gamma 1 t tensor gamma 2 t, which was not positive, which was not non-CT, but positive. Huh? And so I do, you see, the same construction as here. Forget this. This is just calculation. Huh? But the outcome is nice. Namely, we get negative expectation value by using that center group on these row six and row ten are. These two 16 by 16 basic numbers. So, but and I conclude finally. So, what is the outcome of the what can one deduce from the negativity? Well, that rho sigma is not only PPT but also entangled, and the same for rho 10. But there is another outcome, that gamma t cannot be decomposable. Otherwise, one would have gotten a positive result. So at the same time, you discover the entangledness of PPT-ness and entangledness of rho 6 and rho 10, and indecomposability of gamma t. Okay, this is, of course, this is for rho 6 and rho 10, which have that structure, only one cross in one column and row. For the others, the answer is not known. I think there is much structure, and perhaps also some structure which may be worth some investigation. Thank you very much.
Are there more questions? No time for the kind of question. So it seems that it's easy to build this positive but not completely positive maps using these dynamical groups. The hard thing seems to be first to check whether the map is decomposable, right?
Yes.
And second to find families of states which are bounded.
Yes.
That apply to it. So which way did you do it? Because it seems that you started with the dynamical group and then you generate the bounded states.
So the first thing is that using the generators, you can find sufficient conditions to create positive but not completely positive semigroups. Sufficient conditions. I mean, it is not difficult to avoid complete positivity. You just choose a Kosakowski matrix which is not positive. But then you have to work on that non-positive Kosakowski matrix in order to have positivity at least. Then when you have got that, you put together some completely positive semigroup, this one, and a positive semigroup, that the other one. And then you have a structure, okay? Then you want to see whether it is decomposable or not. And for that you have to look at, to create a convenient class of states. Now, for this kind of very simple semigroups with Kosakowski matrix 1, 1, 1 and C2, 1, minus 1, 1, the lattice states are a very convenient class of states, where many answers can be given using this semigroup. If you change semigroups, very likely you should change class of states. this is a reflection of the fact that, I mean, this is pure phenomenology. I mean, you just do trials and errors.
So what trivial when you define the same groups? You have the condition of maybe abelian, and then arguments that are not perfect.
Yeah, they are abelian for positive times. They satisfy composition law.
You could also, in principle, have a non-abelian symmetry. I was just wondering how much of what you said depends on the being abelian and how much.
Very much, because I almost everything depends on the fact that I am working with the generator, which means that gamma t is the exponential. Gamma t is the exponential of the generator, and this makes it immediately abelian. One parameter semigroup. Okay. And so the trick is the fact that the generators are under control to a certain extent, and from that one also to generate classes, general classes of four positive maps.
Any more questions?
Let's thank Harvey again.